it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Go live with Jeff Garland, huh? Go live with Jeff Garland.
What do you mean Papa John's is killing it? What did you just say? Papa John's is killing it?
Dude, you know, trying to kill time before your buddy logs
Wait, up. Wait, hold on. No, let's take a step back. What the fuck is Papa John's is killing it? Yo, what did you mean?
They're killing it as far as, like, they've corralled Shaq into their marketing scheme. You know what I'm saying?
That's not killing it. Have you ever seen his commercials? Every Shaq commercial is fucking tired. No offense to Mr. Shaquille O'Neal. He was one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And he was a wonderful actor on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
So good.
That being said, commercially, when he pops on the screen, I don't think, oh, this company's got it down. I think to myself, this company's desperate. He's not, you know, I'd rather have Barkley as a spokesperson because right. I think it's more interesting.
You're saying that because Shaq's done so much that now it's not special.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you ask me, I can't think of a day in the last 10 years that I haven't turned on the TV and he hasn't been in a commercial. And then, by the way, let's also take a jump. Papa fucking John's and their stupid ass pizza. You eat Papa John's?
Fuck no, I haven't had it since the early 90s.
Well, by the way, if you live in a major city, even during a pandemic, you know you've done your research as to great pizza places.
Yeah.
My favorite pizza in town is Dino's Pizza, which is in Burbank. They have so many choices. It is so fucking good. And one pizza that they have, and I may order it tonight. I shouldn't. But I may. I hit my goal weight with my weight.
You look good.
Thank you. Without dieting, just sitting with my feelings. But I may fucking order Dino's Pizza tonight. Fucking love Dino's Pizza.
Fuck.
Can't say enough good things. There's other good ones too. LBK is another one that's in the Valley. I live up Mulholland, so I get both sides. But I love Dino's Pizza. That's my personal favorite. As a matter of fact, fuck yeah. I'm going to watch a movie tonight. My allergies, if you can't tell, I'm fucking dying. And I'm going to get myself a Dino's Pizza and fucking watch some English procedural. I love English cop shows. That's my favorite thing to watch. I love movies, too. I watch lots of movies and I watch TV shows. But English procedurals, fuck me, love.
What's so special about them? Just the stories are a little more.
Well, they're more real than we as Americans rarely do procedurals right. They're very commercial.
Yep.
They're very. You can see the executives involved in it. Whereas there, they do 6-7 episodes. They're with the top actors. You know, oh, so good. Line of Duty might be my favorite. And supposedly they're in production for a new season, but watch Line of Duty.
Okay. Ooh. I've been watching
it. And also Marcella on Netflix, my highest recommendation. Get a Dino's Pizza and watch Marcella on Netflix. They just did season 3, which is the best season of them all, but they're all great and it builds.
You know how they say, what would you do for a Klondike bar? If they did that commercial with Dino's Pizza, what would be your, like, what would you do? What would you be willing to do for a Dino's Pizza?
I'd take a nap. In other words, nothing. I'm happy to pay for it. Anything else you want from me, I'm not doing.
Yeah, I guess you can get what you want. What's the craziest thing you've been gifted from, like, fans or from, like, I don't know.
Fans?
Co-workers?
I got a painting. Someone's painted me before numerous times. One of the paintings is hanging backstage at Largo.
People that you know painted you?
No. These are gifts from people I don't know. And then I get some other stuff. But then I've gotten weed plenty of times. cookies and candy, which I don't eat, and I just pass them on to somebody. But if it's from a stranger, I throw it away. I don't know.
You know, you just reminded me of, too, when you said, Papa John, you went on your Papa John's rant, which, by the way, I think a lot of people would subscribe to that podcast if it was just a weekly 10 minutes of you.
Ranting about Papa John's. By the way, they would have to be big fans of mine or hate Papa John's. And yeah. There's a lot more that hate Papa John's than are fans of mine. If I could get all the Papa John's haters to become my fans, I could be as big as Kevin Hart. I could play stadiums. I could play fucking stadiums, ironically.
Yeah, and all the
Papa John's advertises.
All the shows would be sponsored by Papa John's.
Yeah. Just face. You know, I know, what's his name? The quarterback that did the Papa John's commercial.
Oh, Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning. I know Peyton Manning. We're not friends. We're acquaintances. I love Peyton Manning. But if Peyton Manning has a low point in his life, it's his affiliation with Papa John's and the guy kissing him when he won the Super Bowl. He gave him a kiss on the cheek. Papa John did.
How much do you think they get paid, like, post-Super Bowl? I think
Oh, by the way, you mean the players or Papa John's thing?
Well, the players.
By the way, you're talking not even single-digit millions. He's probably getting 10, 15 million to affiliate himself, or they're giving him ownership or something.
I feel like Peyton Manning post-Super Bowl dropped like 8 sponsors in 12 seconds. He was like, I can't wait to get home, have a slice of Papa John's pizza, wash it down with a Coors Light, and give my wife some Tampax tampons before she goes to bed. And
you're like, but by the way, you're not far off. But he actually, I love him. I love him, man. He told me when they lose, he would lock himself in a room and watch Curb until he felt better. Isn't that cool? I did a DirecTV commercial with him, Barry Sanders, and Dick Butkus.
Wow.
All three of them I love, but Dick Butkus. What's that?
Mary Fuck Kill. Peyton Manning, Barry Sanders, Dick Butkus. All right, you don't play. Send me an email with your answers. Now, Jeff.
There's no – I'll nap. I'll nap and think about all three of them. I'm into napping. I don't do anything more.
Somebody just quoted a joke that I think I said a while ago about Papa John's. I said, Papa John's looks like he blamed a fart on a fat kid in an elevator.
Oh, he does.
He does. He's always got the look of, like, he just, like –
By the way, he doesn't even work for the company anymore as far as I know.
He got
fired.
Yeah, you can't be dropping racial slurs in, like
– No. Hold on. You can't be dropping racial slurs, period, unless you're at a KKK meeting. Then they applaud. Other than that.
I like how I had to say in pizza meetings as if that was like.
Oh, in pizza meetings, which he did. Crazy. Dude, who does that?
How does that even come up, by the way? It's just like.
By the way, if you're a private fucking racist, it's not if, it's when you get caught. If you're a private fucking sexist, it's not if, it's when you get caught. Yeah. You know, because I improvise, you know that, okay? When I go up on stage and I'm making up all the shit, from the moment I walk up,
yeah.
I mean, I might think of a story that I tell, but until the end, I know I'm going to say something stupid because I'm a man.
Yeah.
But I also know there's not a chance in hell of me saying something ignorant. I'm not going to say something racist, sexist, hateful. That's not... It's nowhere in me.
Yes,
nowhere.
Yeah.
But as a man, oh, I'll say something stupid. You can bet your bottom dollar. Because we are just, no matter how.
I know.
Unless we're a fucking wise man sitting on a hill somewhere in our diapers, you know, being just knowing the world and barefoot, except for those dudes, even those dudes would say something stupid if they talked enough because they're men.
Yes.
We're idiots.
That we are. We're dumbs. That's why we still get off when guys will still drop penises on guys' faces when they fall asleep first. We still do that.
I haven't done that ever, but I've laughed. I've never done it, but I've laughed many times at that. And by the way, you know what? My favorite one is the lipstick while they're sleeping. I remember being at a friend's wedding, and one of the guys fell asleep, and they lipsticked him up, and he woke up. He had no idea it was a thing of beauty.
And he just got up and walked into normal life?
Yeah. How great was that?
I watched one on Instagram the other day of a guy asleep. I'd never seen this. they had a an egg, a cooked, just the yellow yolk of an egg in a spoon, and they put it in his mouth, and it's so, the texture is so slippery that with a half open mouth, it can just slip right in. Like, they just tilted it, and he just swallowed it, and he just goes, and then he woke up, and he was like, "What are you guys?" And it's like, how mad can you be? You swallowed an egg whole. But
yeah,
still,
but
like,
on the flip side of that, what's the reasoning behind that? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
No
Whoever
reason.
The thought of that is a man who's mentally challenged.
What do you think the point is? Because where a man, a young boy even, starts to develop just enough smarts to be able to navigate through society. Because my nephew is 6, and we were playing Heads Up, the kid version. And it had animals on the front, and you try to get them to guess what animal it was by making noises of the animal, right? And it was rooster, and we all go, "Ur, ur, ur." I even said cock-a-doodle-doo, what a rooster is. With all the confidence in the world, Jeff, he looks right at us and goes, "Wolf." Bing.
I don't get it.
So you have to make the noise of the animal that's on the picture, right? We're trying to get him to guess rooster. It's rooster.
So he's doing wolf as a joke?
No.
He thought that was a wolf?
Yes. By the way,
these are meetings you need to have with your family. You need to have discussion and work this out, because I don't have an answer for that. I do know.
Will he grow out of that?
It used to be that a brain was developed, they thought, 25. And now they're thinking more 30. Oh, and wow. I can tell you that I probably, the bump in the road for me in terms of, was when I moved to New York, I believe at 27. And I think that was my transitional period, my time spent in New York at 27 on my own. Prior to that, I lived in Chicago, lived in South Florida with my family. And yeah, I was meant, and by the way, still off at 27, but I think that I was able to be more of a man, more thoughtful.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
At that point, it was 27 for me, very clearly. And I also was very much, I took things hard. I was, you know,
sensitive.
Yeah, very sensitive, but not, I wasn't worried about ego. But yeah, 27 for me was when, so really, you know, teenagers, you know, my sons are 20 and 24, and I'm constantly telling Marla, like, hey, man, just be patient. They're supposed to be idiots. They're 20 and 24.
Yeah, give
them time. Yes.
Even at that age, you can't, also, especially, there's got to be an extra level of, I don't know, acceptance now for them to, or do you think there's more pressure to kind of figure it out because we're in strange times where it's like,
No. Well, at least they're not getting pressure from me, although I'm talking about life with them and they're doing the best they can. But it's hard to have your children blossom during a pandemic. It just really is.
Yeah.
I'm empathetic with their challenge. I feel for them.
I'm just kidding. There's nobody there. Hey, guys. Comedian Adam right here. Hope you're enjoying this episode of the About Last Night podcast. Boy, I got to tell you, I've been feeling good lately. And the reason why? Koi CBD. That's right. Back in the game, feeling like my best self. Look, Koi CBD is the best CBD company in the business. I don't care what you hear from other people, other comics, Koi CBD. See, I got so much BBD, CBD inside me, I ain't even fucking talking right. You know why? Because I slept well on the Koi CBD gummies. That's right. They've got everything from tinctures to bath bombs to gummies. They got a skincare line coming soon. They got hand sanitizer during these times. It's very important. So, what you want to do, if you want to start feeling like your best self, you want to take some Koi CBD bombs, put them in the bath, okay? What? Yeah, come on in. Jackson, I'm doing an ad for my podcast. Can you say hi?
Hello.
Say, I use CBD gummies.
I use CBD gummies.
From Koi.
From Koi.
Koi's the best.
Koi's the best.
It makes me feel good.
It makes me feel good.
I feel like my best self.
I feel my best self.
Look at these muscles.
Look at these muscles.
Kiss them. If you get Koi CBD right now, you go to KoiCBD.com, promo code AboutLastNight, and you get 20% off your first order. That's incredible. Bath bombs, tinctures, skincare, hand sanitizer, gummies. They've got everything. They're my favorite. It's who I use. So start using it for you too. I can't recommend these guys enough. They're homies and all their shit works. Jackson, say 20% off.
20% off. 20% off.
If you use the promo code About Last Night.
If you use the promo code After Night.
About Last Night.
About Last Night.
Show them those guns again. Kiss them. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Do you find yourself crying at movies or commercials more so because you're just more in touch with, you know, the state of the world?
No kidding around. I had one day, and I don't know why, don't know before, don't know after, but I had one day where I was so emotionally moved by everything that I saw. Like, I would get weepy. It was one day, and I'm trying to remember what movie it was that I was watching.
Forrest Gump?
No, you know what it was? I'm not even making this up.
No,
Toy Story 4. And then I watched Coco, Toy Story. I watched a bunch of Pixar stuff. I'd never seen Toy Story 4. I'm one of the voices. So, yeah. And then Coco, which I think is a fucking masterpiece.
The masterpiece, yep.
Coco was so beautiful. Cried during that. Loved it. My friend Lee Unkrich, that was his movie that
made.
He directed. Yeah. So I watched some Pixar stuff. But I was so, here's what it was. I watching Toy Story 4, which I loved the first half of it. There were too many characters for me.
Yeah.
It lost me. And that, by the way, it's still very good.
Yeah.
But it didn't hold up to the other Pixar movies because there was, I mean, you've got the Toy Story characters. People love them. Do you need to add, I'm not exaggerating, they added at least a dozen characters on Toy Story 4 with famous people's voices. It's like, no.
It was like if the Brady Bunch, you knew the family. If they, every episode, brought in a new neighbor, you'd be like, fucking, we get it. They live in a cul-de-sac.
And they did. They had that little boy, Oliver, towards the end of...
Nobody cared for him.
Yeah, was it Oliver or was that the Partridge Family that had Oliver? I don't remember. I don't remember.
Guest stars either way.
Too many. Well, anyhow, so they kind of lost me on that one. Look, Pixar used to be bigger than the whole thing.
Yes.
And for some reason, once they closed their deal with Disney and did all their stuff, they advertised heavily who the voices are now. When I was doing them, no. And now it's like, you know who the voices are. And who goes to see an animated movie based on hearing someone's voice?
I don't think, no.
Isn't there a trust level? Isn't there a trust level with Pixar to, like, I'm going to see every Pixar movie
because
they're great? Not anymore for me. You know, Coco was the last one that blew my mind.
Wally's a tearjerker.
Wally's a perfect movie. I can't believe I'm involved with Wally. I can't.
You're so fucking good at that movie, man. It's like.
Thanks, man.
Oh, dude. I'm
more proud of Wally than I am anything else in my career.
Wow. For real?
For real. More than anything. Wally.
Did you enjoy even just the VO process of going in? And how much did you get to see before you were laying down dialogue?
All right, that's a great question.
Thank you.
Because I worked on that movie for 3 years. I'd fly up there, do a session, and they would come down here at Disney and do a session. We went back and forth. 3 years. Guess what? First time I saw anything, Pixar does two premieres. They do the Hollywood premiere, and they do a
and one private... for Papa John's employees. Sorry, keep going.
No, just for Papa John. And he kisses everybody involved. And then Peyton Manning comes on the screen with a special message. No, so I didn't see a thing, I'm not exaggerating, until I saw the Pixar premiere up in Oakland is where it was. And now you have to understand, when I do looping, whether I do looping on an animated or a regular movie, and looping's when you put your voice in, they need to get it saying something else or whatever, I never look at the screen. I say, play it for me. And I close my eyes and go, okay, all right. And what do you want? Okay. And then I do it. And
holy shit.
No more than two or three takes.
To match it completely.
Well, the thing is, people are using their eyes to match the voice, and that is a waste of time because it adds a whole other sensation.
Right.
Where if you just close your eyes and you hear it, it's your voice. What rhythm do you want? What is it you want me to say? And then I keep my eyes closed because on the screen is the thing. I keep it closed and I'll say it. So I never saw a thing until the week that it premiered both at Pixar and then the end of the week in Hollywood. And the first time I saw it, I was weeping because I couldn't believe I was involved with something so beautiful.
Wow. That's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, seeing it from the anticipation, I'm sure, is enormous in just 2 to 3 years it takes for them to complete a film of that magnitude.
It takes 3 years. And by the way, you know why Pixar movies are so good in general? Because they, all the creatives watch, they make the movie many, many times via computer, not like something you want an audience to see, but the story is there. And guess what they do? They'll do it, and then they turn to each other, and they are fucking critical. They hammer each other. All the filmmakers, all the tastemakers at Pixar sit in a room, and they slam each other.
Wow.
And yeah, whoever's making the movie, you better have thick skin, because they're coming at you hard. What happens ultimately? The best possible movie.
Yeah.
The last time a movie was made that way, to my knowledge, was Charlie Chaplin, was The Silence. Charlie Chaplin would shoot for a week on one scene because he's paying for it, his studio, and then he'd watch it, whatever, and go, this isn't working. Rewrite the whole thing. So you wonder why his movies are so beautiful.
Yeah.
Because he would reshoot and redo. And Pixar makes their movies probably at least a half a dozen times, if not more.
That's
they
amazing.
Remake it. So you know why the Marx Brothers movies are so funny is because they went on the road, and in theaters around the country, they did a play version of their movies, and they knew what jokes worked. They ran them. They had great writers. And they would run the show, and then they would film the movie, knowing full well what worked and what didn't work.
Wow.
They perfected it. And I've always thought that's the way that a movie could be done.
Oh, yeah.
With have a stage ever, version.
Have you ever pitched any Pixar? You know, I met John Lasseter at this. Adam Kroll and I were doing a show. It was him, and they were honoring him and John Lasseter at the Peterson Automotive Museum over on Wilshire.
Oh, because of cars. Yeah.
Yeah, and all the cars.
Yeah, and, yeah. And I know Adam's into cars.
And so they were like, yeah, feel free to, like, make jokes at him or whatever. So I pitched him. I just quickly, like, decided to riff on a couple pitches to him for Pixar movies, but decided to make them very filthy. And I was pitching him, like, these, like, you know, like, middle-aged clits, animated clits. And, like, it was a whole genital-related, like, story. And he was dying laughing. And so the more, and I kept going, I realize a lot of you are not finding this funny, but Lasseter is the one laughing. So I'm going to proceed with more details on what this movie would actually look like. Mm-hmm. And that just got him laughing harder and harder. And then finally it reached the tipping point. And then that's about when I had to get off. And then Carolla got up there and was like, I don't think we'll be seeing an animated clip movie anytime soon. And it was, Lasseter came up and we shared some giggles and had a couple cocktails, and then I never saw him again. I tried to roundabout reach out, had see if my voiceover agent would reach out to him and be like, I made him laugh with this clip movie. They're like, what are you talking about? We're going to drop you. I was like, fair enough. But have you ever had ideas for movies where you've been like, oh, I know enough people, I should try to put this down on paper and send it off?
Well, yes, but they're all original ideas. For example, I've never pitched Pixar. I've never, honestly got truth. I've been doing the show for over 20 years, 10 seasons. I have never pitched Larry David.
What?
No. He's got it covered. I don't. And
wait, pitch him story ideas or anything?
Nope. And now when we're shooting, I can have an idea on something we're working on the scene to help make it better, but only through his vision. Like, I work for him the way I look at it. I'm a second banana, and I'm a producer. My job is to get his vision on the screen, okay? Not my vision, okay? So what I find is really funny is when strangers come up to me and pitch me ideas, and I say to them, hey, I'm an executive producer on the show. I have license. I have never pitched it. But your idea is going to be good. And guess what? No one has ever pitched me anything worthwhile. And I would gladly go, hey, that's great. And I tell them ahead of time, I go, I'm not going to like it. It's not going to be as funny as you think. Because people think all the time, which I don't want to take away from them. I just had a curb moment. I have a curb moment. Well, not one that people should see, one that one that you experienced, but not one that people should see.
Oh, I know. I
it's so much harder to do great comedy than people ever. You know what's great about the pandemic and Me Too and Black Lives Matter? I'm going to tell you flat out.
Please.
You know, what the matter is.
Yes.
And you have nothing to worry about. I'm going to tell you why. Because young white comedians are going to be in trouble. And do you know why they're in trouble? Because mediocrity is no longer acceptable. Shock is no longer acceptable. So let's go outside of comedy first. Outside of comedy, you have people who think they're funny, they put things up on their social media, and it's not funny, and they're fired. Because I was making a joke, even blackface to some people, they think is hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay? So it eliminates your average Joe from trying to be funny if they're remotely intelligent.
Right.
Only be funny with your close friends.
Right.
It's like only share your political views, not share your racism. If you're doing that, you're going to get caught, like I said. But I'm saying your political views, whatever it is, religious views, you keep that with your close to you.
Yes.
Unless you're a master comedian, like unless you're a fucking great, like Louis Black, for example.
Sure.
If you're Louis Black, spew it, man, because you're brilliant. You know, okay.
Louis Black, like you, as you would say, is a big bowl of awesome. So it's fucking
awesome. Right. You know? But he's great. I don't do political comedy. I'm not skilled in that area. I know that. But what's also great now is we're living in a time amongst comedians where being good, not good enough.
Wow.
Not good enough.
No kidding.
You have to be great. I think that there's going to be a lot of women and people of color getting opportunities that are better than what their talent is, which, by the way, I got no arguments with.
Sure.
And I love the idea. You know, back in the day, if you hear about like professional athletes in the 50s and 60s who are black, they had to work so much harder than their mediocre white counterparts to get an opportunity to break free on a run, to get the attention.
Yes.
So I feel that we're in that way, comedy, which is an area I know, where the mediocre white guy is leaving the planet. If you're pretty good and you're white, you might as well look for another job now because you're not going to get opportunities.
Fuck.
You're pretty good and you're black and you're going to. Because if you look at black comedians in history, if you look, every one of them is a genius who became famous.
Yeah.
Everyone was so much better than everybody else that you couldn't deny them.
Right.
But if you look through the history of comedy, I'm not talking about stars, but a lot of mediocre white people got opportunities. And those days are gone, and I love it. I love it. Get the fuck out. I always, like, to me, it just, what it does is it just eliminates, like, how many times have you sat, let's just even say the store. You're in the original room, you're watching somebody, and you think to yourself, who the fuck told you to get up there? Who the fuck told you that you were offering something that we need it because you don't have it.
It happens.
Well, those days are going to be
those days are over.
Far between. Yes. 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 Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, also
because we have to make room now for women and people of color, all different types of people of color, to get their opportunities, which I am fucking for. It's all been against them for so long out here. And the only white guys that are popping through that are still going to have a career or make a career are ones who are so great they can't be denied, just like black comics have been for years.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're getting through, white guy.
Wow.
And I love it. Let's go.
Do you think if you're a white guy even trying to, because, you know, I'm sure you get hit up, and talk about a guy who's generous with opportunities, like you are probably the best I know.
Oh, I love mentoring. I love helping. I love that.
Something after I think maybe three times of hanging out with you at social gatherings and you saying and getting to know me and you being like, I'm going to put you in something. And then like a month later you did, which I know that's not the case for everybody, which people think.
And by the way, what I'm saying about you got to be great, you were great in my movie. You weren't good. You were fucking great. And the way I envisioned you, and I envisioned you great, you were even better than I thought. You were so great. And you had so much chemistry with, what's her name, who played opposite you in the scene. I love her.
Yeah.
My brain is kind of dead. Anyhow.
But you think that So if you're saying that you know, to be a white guy and to break through tougher, if you've got guys that are hitting you up or hitting me, whoever, and trying to get advice, because I get that all the time now, especially when there's less to do, people are like, well, now I guess this is the time when I should start comedy or start a podcast. Would you then say, hey, man, fucking, why don't you?
No, I'd say good luck to you.
Yeah.
And not sarcastically. What else am I supposed to say?
Yeah.
Good luck. I will always help, no matter what sex, no matter what color, anyone I see that's great. And I have all different types of women and color and whatever. I don't even do that on purpose. I've just always been open-minded that way, that I don't care what somebody is. They better be funny. Yeah. So I have people who open for me. I give them a shot. And if they rise to it, I give them more shots. And if I think they're funny, they can also bomb and I'll give them more shots. Because I think I recognize funny. I think, you know, it's the only area of expertise that I have. I've been doing this for 38 years. It's the only one I think I have.
Jeff,
yeah.
That's 38 years. Do you? And Curb is about to come back for an 11.
11. 11, yeah.
I mean, dude, that is... And you told me you guys are, I mean, as of now, right? Planning, production, it's
November, we're supposed to start. The Goldbergs are supposed to start mid-August. I don't know. All I know is that I'm hopeful.
You have a preference of, I mean, both, you know, Curb, I feel like, obviously with everything going down and you know, just like any Curb fanatic, and I mean, I'll even just text you dialogue in the middle of the night and you're, you know, appreciative enough to be like, yeah, that was a good time. I was half asleep. Can you fucking maybe wait till the morning or whatever? But there are so many, like, to get the Curb commentary and situations now, like, I can only imagine, like, what you see with people in stores with masks. I mean,
I know the storyline has nothing to do with the pandemic, but I think there'll be some pandemic stuff in it.
There has to be.
No, there doesn't. It just has to be funny. Because, by the way, by the time it airs, for all we know, and hopefully this shit will be over.
Oh, but you're right.
So let's say we film it in November. It's not coming out until quite possibly the following fall, if not the earliest would be the spring or summer. It could be the fall. So let's say we're out of it. You really want to watch even Larry's commentary on it? I mean, if there's little things, great. But I don't think that people are going to want to be reminded, you know. But if anyone could do it, it's certainly Larry David.
Yeah. You know? I have to ask you, because in your special, is that on Netflix, which people
should. Our man in Chicago, I was talking to my friend Flanny, you know, who owns Largo.
Yeah.
And I said, literally, right before I talked to you, I said, how blessed am I that I was able to do a special, have it turn out even better than I could ever possibly have imagined, and it comes out before the pandemic. That I filmed it before the pandemic. Not that it comes out, it could come out now even and be fine. Right. But, and it's exactly captures what I do. And so I feel so blessed that that was able to happen. And I'm not doing, if I never do stand-up again, I'm so pleased with that as a record.
Yeah, that's the kind of people that had them prepped. I know two people who were getting ready to shoot theirs probably like end of March, early April. And it's like they waited till the last second. And then it was just like, you know, when it rained, of course, it was literally like a day between 2 days where it was like, we're going to wait and see. And then it was like, everything's done, you know.
All done. I know. And by the way, I know that things will get to a point that I can shoot Curb, that I can shoot Goldbergs, that I can shoot movies, that I can do all my stuff. But I'm not doing stand-up again until rooms are full. Okay. Did you hear that? I just want to make sure because it said rooms low battery. Rooms are full and the majority of people aren't wearing masks. I know there's going to be people that for the rest of time are going to wear masks. They'll either be very, you know, they'll be sickly and they need to wear a mask to go out to feel good, or they're a little wackadoodle, but I don't blame them. This would make anybody wackadoodle, okay? But until a room is crowded and I can see faces, I'm never doing stand-up again. So I don't want to say that like it won't happen. I'm hopeful, but I won't, and I'm okay with that.
Not for a capped room. Yeah, you don't have to. See, I'm right now going to Minnesota at Acme Comedy Club in 2 weeks, and it's a smaller room.
Don't do it. How much are you making?
If you're looking at risk reward, I mean,
how much are you making?
I'd make more in one voice.
How much are you making? People don't care. It's like, because people say, how much are you making for that gig? Tell me the truth.
I think $2,500.
I'll give it to you. Don't go. That's what I was working towards. If you need money, I'm happy to give you $2,500. Give, not lend you. Give you $2,500. It is. Look, by the way, Minneapolis is not a hot spot, thank God. But I know fucking Callen went with Malik to fucking Texas and Arizona. And what did Callen get? COVID.
Well, they were high-fiving, fist-bumping. You know what's so funny? I was talking to Paulie. He goes, you hear Callen got it? He was fist-bumping everybody. And Paulie, without a beat, just goes, what about fist fucking? And I go, yeah, I think, well, Fauci said you could fist fuck, but not fist bump. And then there's a beat, and then Paulie goes, what do I do in Seattle? I'm up here right now. And I was like, all right, that's the end of that bit. But, yeah, they were high-fiving and touching.
By the way, why would you even talk with Paulie?
Because he was in Seattle. He wanted to know what to do up there. That's where I'm from.
I know, but I would say I'm busy. I can't do it.
Oh, no.
Okay, well, you're very nice. Not as nice as me.
All right. So you don't. So unless stand-up can be done the right way, you don't. It's just, yeah.
Not worth my time. And not only that, I'm an improviser, and I also go off the audience's energy. I can't. You know, I was so curious when I first, you know, I didn't hear anything about it. I was up late at night, and it said Chappelle's got a new thing.
Yeah.
Early on.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I went, well, that's the best press conference I've ever seen. That was not stand up. You know what I mean? There was nothing with a spin of comedy, but it was brilliant. I loved everything he said.
Yeah.
It was fucking awesome, but it wasn't stand up.
Drive-in shows.
What's that?
People are doing shows at drive-ins.
Yeah, but people are in their cars.
I know. I mean,
it's just not. Here's the thing. I empathize. But Zoom shows, drive-in shows, the only thing that you could do drive-in-wise, I think, is music. Because it's just the applause. You're not going to get your regular energy, but at least you'll get applause and people will dig it. But you can't do comedy right now. Stand-up comedy is not happening. And I'm going to tell you something that you do that's smart. You're also an actor. And I would. If I were you, I would expand my portfolio. I used to cut on myself because I did so many things, directing, producing, writing, acting, stand-up. I have my photography. I mean, I do so many things. And I thought, well, you know, I'm never giving enough time to any one of them to be brilliant.
Right.
To be as great as I can be.
They say, right?
What's that?
Stretching yourself.
Stretching myself and not focusing on one, maybe two things. I got a half dozen, but I'll tell you what's beautiful about it. What's fucking beautiful about it is it kept me employed and it keeps me employed.
Yeah, because you've done it all and do it all.
Right. And so I've always stayed. I've had moments where I had no money and no work, but I cultivated new work by maybe introducing a new skill or something like that. It's a very active thing, and it's very difficult, you know? And so people who just go, oh, I'm just going to do stand-up, good luck to you.
Yeah. Well, what do you
say? I would say for you, I'm talking to you, man. I'm sorry for pointing, but hey. I would expand your portfolio as much as you can and do a lot of different things that you enjoy, that you're great at. You know, don't do any one of them. But then when things calm down, maybe focus harder on one or the other.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you've got star quality. I think there's a lot of things you can do.
I really do.
I think you're a special dude. And you're also sweet like sugar. You're a great fucking guy. The world's a better place with you, Adam Ray. It's a fact. No, it is.
I'm going to send my mom just that clip.
Okay, here's what I want to say to you.
Share with the entire Temple Beth
audience. No, here, you got to be look, you know me. You even wrote me. Are you sure you want to do this? Do you want to just catch up on the phone? Because you know I don't want to be here. I want to be napping.
In a Dino's deep dish.
Fuck you. Can I just say something? Fuck yeah, motherfucker. So, and I'm happy being alone with my dog. Here, I'll show you my dog. This is too fucking cute. Hold on. No, not there. Hold on. There we go.
Holy.
That's my dog, by the way, from the Goldbergs. I adopted my dog from my TV show. I think I'm the first person, and I mean this, who's ever done that. She is my best friend. We've worked together for 7 years. She's lived with me for a year. I asked her trainer to help me find a dog. She goes, what about Sage? She plays the part of Lucky on the Goldbergs. She has an answer to Lucky, but she is fully trained. The woman who had Sage got another dog, and they fought, and so she gave her to the trainer, and the trainer is like, if you want her, you can have her. And I go, what do I have to do to earn this? And now she's been my best friend for a year. Little did I know that without her, I would not get through this pandemic.
Or roommate get through this. I just said the other day, I go, if you're by yourself, get a goldfish, at least so you can look at something moving that's not you.
Well, it's totally. And by the way, I'm a guy who hugs and kisses and what have you, and she gets all my affection.
What's in the what have you?
What do you mean?
He said, I'm a guy that hugs and kisses and what have you. What does the what have you come with? What does that entail? That can mean something.
A good firm grip on the shoulder.
Okay, good.
Things are going to be all right. There's no weird what have yous. Why do you add weird shit? I'm thoughtful and kind. I don't hug anybody that I sense would not want to be hugged. There's no sexuality to my hugs. I have the best. By the way, I stopped hugging for a long time, and I still don't hug as often as I do. But my hugs are the most delightful platonic hugs.
They are.
And so ladies are missing out on it, and men are enjoying my hugs. It's a fact. Because I have so many women friends, and they've told me stories about creepy touching and all this stuff. What's that?
About bad huggers?
Oh, yeah. There are huggers that are, get the fuck out of here. By the way.
You can have your week ruined by a bad hug.
I'm going to tell you when we're not on here, maybe the creepiest hugger of all time, and you'll go, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, nope.
Is this not a curb? If I
said I'll tell you, I can't say, but it's somebody very well known that, by the way, this is a man, and I got to tell you, there wasn't a time that he hugged me that I didn't feel it was creepy.
Oh God, how do you not know that when you're the creepy hugger?
You don't know. It's a lot of times alcohol's involved.
You know what I was about to do? For sure, I was about to tell you that someone's going to send a message pitching you the creepy hugger, but I already remember an episode of Curb when somebody went up to Larry and wanted to confirm dinner like a week out, and he hugged Larry, and he goes, ah! Larry goes, God! He goes, what? He goes, our cheeks touched.
One of the things I love about Curb is there's no lessons learned. There's no hugging. It's like a whole other level from Seinfeld in terms of.
Oh,
but Seinfeld was pretty consistent too.
Did you watch?
And I love that. I love Seinfeld. The unfortunate thing for me with Seinfeld was it was Thursday nights, and Thursday nights during its entire run, a lot of it, I lived in New York. Thursday nights was doing sets. There was no staying home on Thursday.
That was the night.
My big night to stay home was Monday. Once I got, like when I first started, Monday was the open mic night in Florida at the comic strip. But as things wore on and when I moved to New York, Monday and usually Tuesday, because it gives you great energy to take a couple nights off. Because years, by the way, years in my career, I would work 30 days straight and not think anything of it. Once I started taking a couple days off a week, I got funnier. Because you need that rest.
Yeah.
So I didn't really, I caught a lot of Seinfeld in syndication or on DVD. You know, I watched a lot of episodes on DVD because I was not home on Thursday.
Right.
So I would, The last show that was on Thursday nights that I may have watched when it was first came on was Cheers. Like, it, you know, because once, I mean, Thursday night, when you're a comedian, that's work night. There is no, I don't know anybody who takes off Thursdays. It's, I mean, the real hardcore is Thursday through Sunday.
Right.
The other ones, depending on who you are and what your schedule, but I would even do Tuesdays and Wednesdays and just take off Mondays. My favorite night, even to this day, to do stand-up.
Sunday, right?
Sunday. Every Sunday. Yeah. And, you know, I did it at Flappers for a long time. I look forward, hopefully, doing it again there.
Your shows are great there. That's like such a great workout. We just go up and riff for an hour, maybe two, of just play. I mean, it's so great. And the audience is coming there for you, and they know it's different every time.
But the audience has had a weekend to relax.
Yeah.
So you
think it's tougher to get them to laugh then because of that? Because they're just so mellowed
out? No. They're in such a good mood. They're a big bowl of groovy, if you will. They are ready for whatever adventure you take them on. Sunday night is magic. Saturday night, on the other hand, well, we know Fridays. Get in the early show because late show's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Friday late shows are the notorious hard. Thursday nights can be really good, people taking long weekends.
Yeah.
But see, Saturday night is great, but it's not. And the reason being is everyone's weekend is defined by what they did on Saturday night. So there's a lot of pressure. That's why when you go up on Saturday night, you feel a tightness with the energy because that's their weekend. It better be good. So it can be great, it also can be a ton of pain. But the one night that is rarely, rarely bad, it's almost like the opposite of Friday late shows where people are tired and drunk,
right,
is Sunday night. Sunday night is filled with joy and calmness.
I would venture to assume most comics, you know, when you do a weekend, Sunday is, and I side with you, Sunday is one of my favorite nights because, A, it's the last show of the weekend. If I'm doing weekend of shows, it's one show. It's probably my most exploratory, fun, riff-filled,
it's artistic
show that
it's
I'll
artistic,
ever do.
Man. It's artistic. It's a delight. That's because people are filled with joy and they're relaxed.
You feel a supportiveness from them, almost them being like,
without
hey,
a doubt.
Sunday, we shouldn't even be here right now. It's for whatever reason, like, you know, doing a...
I lost you.
Yeah.
Hold on. There you are.
There we go.
I lost you for a second. My audiences are supportive. Go ahead.
No, I was going to change topics, but your audiences are supportive regardless. Yeah. Which is
but Sunday night is like extra. It's so good.
How much prep did you do for the special before you laid it down? I know you were working quite a bit.
Well, I did a few things. One was I did a lot of sets at the Improv, Comedy Store,
Largo. Did a few road gigs, right?
I did. Prior to it, I did like 5 weeks on the road, but I just wanted to feel powerful. But I worked years on it.
Yeah.
I would say, nope, not doing it. I had it in my back pocket for years that I had a special. And then I finally do it. So I do two tapings that night. The first taping, not taping, it was digital. There's no tape anymore. And we stopped saying filming. I don't know what we call it anymore. But it was onto a memory card of some sort. It was 4K or 6K or 90K.
Yeah, it looked beautiful.
My first show was not tight and not tightly written, but there were stories and there was an outline of the direction I wanted to take it. And it went great. So great, I was thrilled. I go up in the room and, you know, Matt Edgar helped me with the show.
Love Matty.
I said to Matt, I go, now comes fun time. I go, now I'm just going to let it rip.
Wow.
And the second show, which is my special, the stories that I love, the direction is all there, but I improvise like I invented improvising. And I am thrilled. It's me at my most powerful, at my most joyous. It captured me. I am so happy.
That's amazing.
I'm so happy. I hope I get an opportunity to do another 1, 2, 3, 4 of them.
You will.
Hold on. But if I never do.
There we go.
It is what it is, you know, if I never do. But plenty of time to make movies and TV shows, you know, in general. But comedy is very special. And by the way, I respect what we do as an art form, and I have great respect for it. So I'm only going to do it in the right way. It's not about anything but that.
I hear you. Yeah, you're. It's. How do you think mimes are handling this?
They're not saying much.
Wow, should we go out on that?
Up to you, but it was just too easy. That was a softball. That was nothing.
I know. I didn't know if you were going to come back with anything. I didn't know if you were going to address it. Because here's the great thing about you. Unexpected, spontaneous, consistently different, right? Which is a great name for a special. But I didn't know if you were going to go, I see what you're doing. And mimes are people too. And actually give me an
answer. I'm not going to say it like that. But I would say to you, where are you going with that? That's stupid. I would, because I'm a, by the way, you know, with me, our friendship is honest. I'm always going to be a straight shooter with you.
Yeah.
The only time you won't get the truth out of me, unless by some chance it is the truth, is if you make a movie and it's locked. If you make a movie and it can't be edited and you go, what did you think? I fucking loved it. I loved it. You have to. You got no choice. Even if you're an honest dude, you got no choice because it only hurts people.
Yeah.
It only hurts people. Unless you find it terribly offensive, then you can go, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If it misses, like people do things, both stand-up specials and movies that I don't love, but it's easy to say something nice.
Yeah.
But unless I fucking hate something, then I'll tell whoever it is, what the fuck were you thinking? You know?
Yeah, but people need to hear that,
too. In general, I say nice things. By the way, in life, I try and say nice things. It's not, no, unless somebody can do something about it, who needs negativity?
Are you going to come out of this a couple more minutes? Are you cool? I don't want to get off with you. Do you think you're going to come out of this pandemic? That's one thing a buddy of mine was asking me the other day. He goes, I'm trying to come out of this pandemic better than I went into it, like just on all fronts. And I'm like, oh, cool. Because he was talking about how he needs to be getting more exercise. And he's like, I'm writing a lot. He's like, but I'm finding that I'm, you know, meeting my motivation with a lot of, lethargy. And so I sometimes will just kind of sit and stew and know what I want to be doing. And I'm just, again, not being consistent with the routine. And he's like, he said, I feel like that we're on the, you know, up and up and it's going to curb soon. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know what you're watching, but for sure, but be optimistic about it. But he's like, I want to make sure that I come out of this better on those fronts. Do you feel like you're?
All right, I want to tell you something. There's a couple of things to tell you about this. The reality is, if what you need to get through the day is eat a Dino's pizza and pet your dog, do it. No one's expecting anything more of you.
Amen.
By the way, I like writing. I like being productive. I like being part, you know, doing things.
Working.
But hold on. It's incredibly difficult under these times. So you have to be kind to yourself and say, I'm okay doing nothing. I'm going to spend the day in bed. Well, guess what? There's a fucking pandemic. Enjoy your sheets. Feel every bed count that you got. No, this is really true. Now, the flip side of this, I feel, this is me, that, do you know what a lotus flower is? Ever seen a lotus flower?
Yeah.
Lotus flower is probably the most beautiful flower. Do you know where it grows from? Underwater in the muck. In the muck. Whoa. Here in LA, we have a beautiful area with lotus flowers. It comes from dirt and shit. Up comes a lotus flower. I truly believe with all my heart that at the other end of this is a big fucking lotus flower. The world will still be tough. There'll be things, but there's going to be plenty of joy and a lot of it will go back to normality. There'll be crowds at games, crowds at shows. Like I feel all of that, but we don't know when, and we've got to be kind to ourselves while this fucking shit is punching us in the face. So I say to you, Adam Ray, whatever you need to do, without breaking the law or doing something terrible, which you don't, but whatever it needs to do. If you and your girlfriend want to spend the day in bed, fucking do it. If you guys want to buy a DVD of, I'm talking old time now, DVDs, or watch, you know,
we'll edit this out.
Mr. Rogers, I don't give a shit. It's like, do what you need to do to get through your day. No one's expecting anything.
If you want to smoke two fat blunts and turn on Seal's Greatest Hits and see if it matches up with Singing in the Rain, go for it.
Wow, that would be a weird adventure. Because I never heard that those two match like Pink Floyd.
Have you tried that in Wizard of Oz? Have you done that?
I've seen it online. It's pretty amazing.
Fuck.
And also, it's better than Seal's Greatest Hits. He did do some really good songs.
He did.
Some really great songs. That one from the Batman movie a few years ago,
Kiss from a Rose. Yeah.
Fuck! I dare you. I dare you to make a better song than that. That song is produced well, sung well, like every aspect of it.
It's got all the emotion that you want in a rock ballad, you know?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Rain, tears.
I don't love, you know, I wouldn't buy Seal's Greatest Hits, but he did some great work. And he may do some more in the future.
Has anyone ever told you like, hey man, if you listen to like, you know, Cher's second album while you're watching I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With, dude, your fucking mind's going to be blown, man.
No, that's you trying to be funny. What are you doing? We had such a real moment until then.
Looking for my dog.
Yeah, but by the way, Cher's second album with my movie, you could have done a better choice than that.
Who would you? Okay, so if we're playing that and not.
So, all right, are you ready? Ready? Here we go. I'm going to do one that's
please
even
do me better. Better.
So this is going to be fucking weird. Your movie was on, and my girlfriend at the same time, I went to Cheese With Us on. She put on, years ago, she was doing it as a joke, the Olsen Twins made an album, and she put it on, and I swear to God, not all of it, but a lot of it matches up with your movie.
It's very funny. It's very funny.
Well, it's not very funny, no. But for that premise, it's funnier.
And it was more specific.
I played it real.
Yeah, you did.
You didn't play it real. Play shit real, man. Don't try so hard. Spin on things. You're a natural talent. You're special, Adam Ray.
So I should have been like,
fuck around.
So I should have been like, hey, so I don't know if you know this, Jeff, but Nick Lachey of 98 Degrees, he was in the group, obviously, for like 3 to 4 years, right? And then they all kind of did their thing. He married Jessica Simpson. She became a huge star. So he decided to kind of, you know, piggyback on that success and do his own thing. So he did a solo album. Didn't do huge on the charts, but he had two songs that went like double platinum. The second song, if you listen to that while watching the opening scene of Jurassic Park, it's almost to the note, like as the gate opens.
That's good. And I would say to you saying that to me, you're full of shit. Is this true?
Fuck yeah, it is.
No, see, that wasn't good. The fuck yeah, it is. It was bad. I'd reshoot that. Here, let me do fuck yeah, it is for you. Yeah. Ask me.
So wait, so Nick Lachey and the opening scene in Jurassic Park lines up?
Oh, it's fucking weird. I know you don't think it's real, but I swear to God, it's fucking weird it happens. Because you got to remember how absurd it is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Don't say fuck yeah, it is. That's a normal thing to say.
Also, it's like, again, my brain goes to the curb with the voice going way up when it, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know, but just make everything real. I got a comedy lesson for you. Ready?
Great.
Don't put a spin on things. Just say it. And either you're funny or you're not. And you bring to the table whatever energy you bring to the table.
Wow. That's fucking.
It's true. And by the way, you know, actors, I see actors do it all the time, but you know who does it more than anyone? Ingenues. Beautiful young actresses. They will put a spin on the way they say something. It's like, no. I met Neil Simon, and he told me when actors would come in and audition for his plays, if any of them put a spin on something, they were done. And by the way, I can tell you, when you audition for Curb, you've already done Curb.
Yeah.
But when you audition for Curb, it is exactly the same thing. You come in and put a spin on something, Larry has written you off.
You're right.
He wants the real moment.
Oh, I remember how I know my audition was going well was hearing him break and look, and then turning and seeing you break. But also, and you had told me that before I went in, you were like, you know the show. I know you're obsessed. You watch it, you know, before you go to bed. But just keeping it real. And they tell you, too, like, even Allison Jones, like, don't try to be funny. But
by the way, you know, talk about somebody who believes in you. Allison Jones, best comedy casting director in the business
of all time.
She knows you're a fucking star.
Oh, we lost you, Jeffy. All right. Well, that was it for Garland. I think the battery is getting low. I think he's going to go get a Dino's pizza. Guys, thanks for watching. That was fucking incredible. Again, the great Jeff Garland. I'll be sharing this on my page. And that's all she wrote. Guys, enjoy your weekend. Hey, what day is it? Tuesday? Yeah, you can say that this early on. Go watch Jeff's special, by the way. It's fucking brilliant. And it's on Netflix. And Goldberg's Curb writes everything. Dr. Phil. No, I'm not going to do Dr. Phil. We're going to end on a high note. All right. Love you, Jeffy. Bye, guys.